Okay. So if you follow the Elon Musk story closely, the Tesla story closely, you probably know. And if you don't know, let me try again. Hold on. That was a terrible introduction. Okay. So if you follow the Elon Musk story closely, you know that a Delaware judge essentially took away his comp package a few months ago. Well, it turns out that she's done it again. There was an appeal process. What a weird way to stage this conversation. Yeah. Because it's so ridiculous. I don't even know how to stage it.
Well, that's fine. Actually, that's good. I think that's good because it is kind of confusing because it's not on the pay package. What it is it's on the motion to revise the trial decision. So okay. The court already made a decision. Let's back up. So the court made a decision found in favor of Tarento. They then had further
briefing. This is the Tarento is the guy with the 9 shares.
9 or right. 7 or 4 whatever, or two. Whatever. Second largest shareholder, I believe, in Tesla. I believe it's the second largest. But she found in favor of them, part and mostly because what she found, just to kind of simplify it, was it was a conflicted shareholder transaction. In other words, the transaction benefited Elon. So therefore, because of that, Delaware applied certain rules on how it evaluated it. And when it evaluated, it had to look at it at the overall fairness. The judge, for whatever, you know, her particular biases and reasons, she found it wasn't fair and then threw out the pay package, rescinded it. So sent it back to where they were prior to 2018. No restriction, by the way, on doing another pay package, but you couldn't do this one.
Yeah.
So all that left was the attorney's fees.
And sorry, now, 1 second. And before we get to the fees, and then after that happened, you know, either because of that decision by the judge or whatever else, Tesla brought forward the pay package again in front of shareholders with some of the tweaks that the judge called for, as far as, like, you know, be more clear about your relationship with the board, so on and so forth. But they brought it to a vote again. And then shareholders again voted for the pay package, something like 75% or whatever. It was a super majority. It was an overwhelming majority. They again voted for his 2018 pay package, right? And then yesterday, or whatever it was, yesterday, right? Today's Tuesday. Yesterday, Monday. The judge, as it pertains to where we are now, she essentially said, "This doesn't matter. I made my decision, and you help me sort of clean this up as I say this, because this is probably, like, wrong legally speaking, I guess."
That's legal language, exactly.
Yes.
This is wrong. Not this way. Out of here.
That's the other way, right? Yeah. So then what happened is she said, "I don't care if the shareholders voted on it again. I'm going to go with my original decision, which is that he shouldn't be getting paid this much, even though the shareholders voted again for it. And because of that, you are liable for damages and or whatever the freaking legal term is. And the lawyers of Tarento, the guy with the 9 shares, which could be the most in Tesla investor history, those lawyers are going to get paid $345 million for their wonderful efforts to screw over Tesla shareholders. And they can get paid out either in cash or in shares." Right. So
correct.
Then, okay. So now unpack this for me, because it's, as you can see, this is extremely confusing for just a layman like myself.
Yeah,
you know?
It is. And that's kind of, we started off what the proceeding was yesterday. It wasn't a new trial or anything like that. And we had a discussion about this back because I thought this is my view, my opinion. I thought what they were trying to do post trial was just inappropriate. I didn't think it was the right place for it. And I predicted that she would disregard it, which she did disregard it. So let me back up though. So let me back up and fill in the blank, and then I'll explain, because she did address all those issues that you just mentioned. She does address it in her 103 page ruling.
This woman loves to write.
She does, or somebody, her law clerk likes to write. Somebody is writing. Yeah. Okay, so ChatGPT. One issue is like, right. So one issue is she ruled against Elon. The second issue was the attorney's fees. So that's what's been going on. So they argued about the attorney's fees. While they were arguing about the attorney's fees, they had a revote. They then used that revote to make a motion to revise the judgment. That's how we got this point in time. The judge took all that under consideration. So there was some hearings about it and whatever. And again, I'm not talking about bias or what's correct, because I'm not telling you in this discussion what I think should happen. what I'm doing is telling you what I think will happen. And and sometimes when we like are fans of somebody, we may not like the information. I'm not here to kind of question her decision. So,
right.
So that brings us to her decision. So in the decision, what she does is she evaluates what happened in that motion, and she goes through what Tesla did to get that thing voted on again a second time. And she deals with the proxy statement and the way she, and so let me back up. So I told you there was a standard, it had to be fairness, whatever. And there's also a burden shift. So usually when you're the plaintiff, you're the one bringing the case. Usually the burden of proof is on you. In this case, because the court, and a lot of this, by the way, is subjective. So this is a decision that the judge is making, not black or white. So could another
judge McCormick chose to say Tesla are going to be the ones, or Elon is going to be the, or whatever, that party is going to be responsible for proving that they are, that they didn't do a wrong thing.
Right. It was fair.
Instead of the plaintiff, instead of the person bringing it forward saying this is what they did wrong, the court is going to assume that they did something wrong and they have to prove why it's not wrong.
Correct. Unless they meet their burden, they lose. That's kind of how it goes.
But okay.
And again, subjectively, again, that call about whether they meet the burden is a subjective call. Because, you know, it is not a jury. It's some judge. And again, a judge with biases and prejudices, whatever, you know, like all human beings. But that's how they're inclined. So we have this test, the fairness test. So she went back and looked at the ratification. And she examined the ratification. And she said, looking back, okay, what can you do? Are you required, if they ratify it, are you required, therefore, to follow their directions? And in her analysis, she found that there's not a lot of cases in Delaware on this. So could a Supreme Court decide this is wrong? Of course it could.
Yeah.
But
Tesla still is going to appeal, by the way, so the audience knows. Yeah. There's appeal hasn't even been done yet. So this
we'll get to that, because it's not necessarily. Yeah. I don't necessarily think it's going to be appealed necessarily.
But okay, let's set that aside.
It's an option. But she went through it and she said, because of this type of transaction, if the shareholders vote and you do everything and there's like a test, what you have to do to give the shareholders the proper information so they can make a decision. But she says, even if you do that, there's four options of what you can do with that situation. And one of those options is not accepting the shareholder's determination. The option is shifting the burden. So what you might do is shift the burden of proof back. That's it. So she looked at four options. She chose the option that was least beneficial for the Tesla shareholders. So in an
effort to protect Tesla shareholders.
That's the idea, because the statute is supposed to protect the company. It's a derivative action for the benefit of the company. That's why the shareholder is only a 9 shareholder. He's not obviously
okay. Can I stop you there, Richard, for a second, because this is where my blood starts to boil. Okay. And I'm starting to drink my coffee, so my caffeine started to kick in, so this might get weird, okay? So here's what really fucking pisses me off. So the judge says, okay, they did something wrong for the shareholders by putting this in front of the shareholders and saying, hey, look at how much money I can get paid if I hit these near impossible goals. And the shareholders say, yes, let's go ahead and do that. And then he does it. And then the judge is like, oh, wait, no, you weren't forthcoming about how clear you were about the negotiation. You have to take it away and fix it, right? You have to fix it in some way. And then so they basically take the same exact fucking thing, they put it in front of the shareholders, and they're like, hey, by the way, even though now you know all this shit went down, go ahead and vote on it again. And then what happens? The same exact thing happens, right? And now the judge is like, eh.
Yeah. Well, she dealt with that, and she said that it's a lot of words. So amongst a lot of things she said, in order for that to work, and even if it did work, it would only shift the burden back. Which would be a big thing, though. It would shift the burden back to the other side. Now they have to, it's their burden.
But their revote wasn't enough to do that somehow?
No, what she's saying is I could do it, under the law, but the proxy has to be accurate. And she, and by the way, I referenced this during the time. I was on, I think, with Alexandra and Herbert. My concern was when they were present, and again, it may have made no difference, by the way, but when they were presenting this to the shareholders after the fact, I didn't think, and I said it, by the way, they shouldn't have presented it in a persuasive manner. They should say, here's everything you want. There's a revote. If you think it's fair, vote in favor. If you don't, vote against us. Here's everything. They didn't.
Why does the judge care about how, like, this is what blows my mind. Like, people are free to just look at the thing that's being put forward.
I'll tell you why. I'll answer. Because the judge is finding that the way it was set up was fundamentally unfair to shareholders. So even if you've, so, and sometimes in life it happens, you're in a position, you have to make a bad decision. So you might uphold something for all kinds of reasons. The judge says, that's not for your decision to make. That's a bad decision. And if it's, you're being screwed because of somebody breaching their duty to you, I'm not going to let you put a stamp of approval on it unless it's absolutely done to the T. And in this case, she actually cited like four examples in the order about specific misrepresentations in the proxy statement. So that's the balance. So she's saying, listen, you weren't straight and act. And again, I'm not trying to.
I know. You're just helping us understand how she's approaching it. Yeah.
She's saying, listen, if you were straight about it and you gave them all the info and you didn't mislead them in any way, then I'm going to shift the burden of proof. I'm not going to ratify the vote. I'm going to shift the burden of proof, and then we'll evaluate the case based upon that shift, which means probably Elon wins, by the way, if they're doing it correctly. But if you don't, I'm not. And here I'm not. And she was pissed. And we talked about this. It's in there. She was kind of annoyed, even though it's just kind of thrown in there, about the conversations that occurred between counsel for Tesla and the plaintiff near the end of the case, where basically the plaintiff filed a bunch of motions to make sure that Tesla did nothing or Elon did nothing to kind of circumvent the ruling. And then went back and they tried to circumvent the ruling. I said at the time, I thought she'd be pissed. It's reflected in there. But there is one particular statement. We'll get to the attorney's fees. There's one statement in here that she threw in here that I thought, wow, if I'm Tesla's lawyer, I'm going to jump all over this. It's just a throwaway line. I marked it. It was a throwaway line, but to me, it reflects a bias that ran throughout the case. Because again,
I mean, it's so obvious there is a bias. Don't you think it's obvious?
But in courts, there is. I mean, it's not unusual there to be bias.
That's why you have the appeal process.
Yeah, you do. And you know, so what's going to happen?
Court,
you know,
all that stuff. Yeah.
So here it is. By the way, this is when she's talking. We haven't got here yet, by the way. She's talking about the attorney's fees, because that's the second half of the award. So the first half, she says, I know what you did, but one, she gives a bunch of reasons. One, you can't ratify it because you didn't raise it before. And if it's a defense, you have to raise it before the end. I agree, by the way. And I said it, by the way. Two, you can't do it if you're not truthful. And there was four separate reasons. So she says, because of that, you lose, basically, and it's post-trial. And like what I said, they could file a new action. They could go back a new action. But what she says before she talks about attorney's fees, page 77 of her order, two lines. And this is now she's talking about how to figure out what attorney's fees to award. And the line is, in search of a defensible valuation approach that avoids the windfall problem, the analysis turns to defendant's arguments. So I heard that. May not mean much to you. I'll read it again. In search of a defensible valuation approach that avoids the windfall problem, the analysis turns to defendant's arguments. So this is about, you can't give attorney's fees that are a windfall. So if a judge goes and analyzes it and ends up seeing they're going to get $2 billion in legal fees, that's just so out of kilter with all awards of attorney's fees. That would be a windfall. So you can't do that under Delaware law. But the part that got my attention was the defensible valuation. Because that's an unusual word. Defensible to what? So to me, that was defensible on appeal. That's not making the correct decision.
Okay, Richard, that's one second. So can you read that one? Because yeah. this is you. I can tell you are, this is like English to you. Like yeah. I still, there are like seven words in there. I'm like, what the fuck? Okay, so yeah. can you read it one more time?
Yeah. In search of a defensible valuation approach that avoids the windfall problem.
Stop there.
Yeah.
Okay. In search for a defensible evaluation approach. So, yeah. so basically saying like, in trying to understand, in trying to, we're going to try to come up with some sort of method to come up with a fair number so that it's not a number that makes it easy for lawyers to just get super rich just by bringing whatever they want to the court.
I'm going to take it a different way. Okay. I'm going to come up with an opinion that has a good chance of surviving appeal.
I see.
Okay. That's it. Nothing to
She's
do.
She's trying to protect her decision.
That's it. Not the okay. merits. Like the line should have been in search of finding a proper valuation.
Defensible. I see now. Okay.
Defensible. That word.
Interesting.
Yeah. Defensible okay. is a bad word because we saw it in the, and I'm Tesla's lawyer here. Uh-huh. So when I'm arguing, because one of the arguments is going to be bias in that opinion she wrote, the first line was about wealth. It was yeah. purely unrelated to any substance.
Is the richest person in the world getting paid too yeah. much or something like
that? Is that a relevant ridiculous. Consideration? That's yeah. the very first thing she says. And then she throws this little line. Again, it's a one word. And, you know, she may say it's defensible. You know, she may claim it a different way. I, as Tesla's lawyer, say, hey, she said she was after, basically, she says she's after this guy because he's wealthy. Here she's looking for a way to justify her opinion so it doesn't get reversed. She's not looking to make a correct
That's
decision.
Insane.
She's looking to make a justifiable decision. I found that really interesting in my reading through it. So
it kind of like opens a window in a way. So like if I'm looking at it from a lawyer's perspective, it's like a door that has opened that gives us an insight into how she's potentially thinking about this case. Instead yeah. of trying to protect the shareholder or trying to come to the right decision, like you said, she's just trying to say, okay, that was my decision. I'm just trying to come up with a way so that it sticks.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Okay.
And, she
and then
said
what was
it.
The line after that? What was the line after that?
So it says, in search of a defensible valuation approach that avoids the windfall problem, windfall being paying too much, yeah. the analysis turns to defendant's arguments. So it's Tesla's arguments. So she's now trying to appear like she's considering
unbiased.
And she takes an interesting approach. And we're going to get to there, but I'm going to kind of shift really quickly. So what happens from here? Cause that's the question. So, there may be some procedural baloney that goes on still before this is final. If it's final and there's no alternative arrangement, reached, then within 30 days, they have to file a notice of appeal, a petition for appeal in the Delaware Supreme Court. Could they petition the U.S. Supreme Court to intervene without the state Supreme Court? They could. I would say in most occasions, almost all, they would not intervene. One, because it's not really, their job is not to kind of take cases that are not ripe for them. And two, it would also encourage other people to do the same. They certainly don't want to do that. And three, there's kind of a states' rights versus federal rights. So if this was a federal court, they might be more likely to intervene, but this is a state court. So less likely for a federal court to intervene in a state court, more likely they kind of let it play out and then they would intervene if need be. So let's say, the judgments, we're going through a timeline just for fun. So let's say judgment was final today. It's not, but let's say it's final today. They have to file within 30 days. The average length of a appeal in Delaware, I think this is more complex than most appeals, but it also might get a lot more resources than most appeals. But the average length from start to finish is about 300 days. So a little under a year. I figure like a year is probably like a fair calculation. So what would they discuss on appeal? They have to take the facts as is. They can't like relitigate the facts. They look at the law, they apply it. There'd be a bunch of arguments made. Be like, for example, like we're talking about, is there bias? Is the statute unconstitutionally vague? Because what is a benefit? What is a financial benefit to the, I'm throwing out a question. There's probably a million of these questions, but like when I think is, what is a financial benefit? What is the benefit to the company here?
So question here. So on the appeal process, can Tesla come out and say, okay, so as you can see, this thing was written in 2018. Mr. Nine Share guy put the lawsuit in 2018 with the thought process that said, hey, this is actually damaging investors, right? And then what ended up happening in subsequent years is that you saw that the stock went ballistic. And every single shareholder from that time would have made a ton of money. And not only that, but the shareholders reapproved a package from 2018 that would have given Elon an unfair comp package, and it passed with overwhelming majority, regardless of bias. Like, the proof is in the pudding. There's no damages there's no damage to Tesla investors.
Yeah. So
Tesla investors made a ton of money, right?
Yeah. On that, but on this. Yeah, I agree. Yes, he did a great job. He made all of us money.
But my question is, can the appeal, can he use that sort of verbiage? No. Like, can that, that's
not
insane.
Really. I mean, he's going to throw it in, but the court should not consider it that realistically. So what the court's going to look for is, you know, like, what, again, there'll be a bunch of arguments made, bias, the statute's unconstitutional, because is there a benefit? This is what I was going to say. Is there a benefit to the company? So let's say arguably there is. So let's exclude that. So, but there's a cost. So there is some cost. But that cost is like literally a nanosecond. Really? Cause it's not like the judge did not say you can't give him a pay package. The judge did not say you can't go back and do whatever you need to do to give him another pay package. Nothing. So in my mind, there's a benefit for a second. Is that enough to satisfy the statute? Or does it really have to be a real benefit more than just a nanosecond? And because that makes it kind of an illusory benefit. It's really not there.
Hold on. Help me understand this. Oh, I think I'm confused. So benefit to who?
Benefit to Tesla in this case.
In the way of putting, okay, so say that one more time.
The way they calculate it, they try to figure out. So this is how they did it. They looked at attorney's fees. They're trying to figure out what's the benefit to Tesla, the financial benefit. The attorneys for plaintiffs asked for $5.6 billion in shares originally. The court figured out, because they say, okay, you did a great thing here. You did basically what you did is you cleaned up the language. So that has a benefit beyond a financial benefit.
I see.
Harder to quantify. What that, because now you say the next company won't do this. So that's the benefit.
Even though we all know that it's not really a benefit, what they actually did was they actually hurt the company more than right? I mean, that, and so this is what's insane to me is that our process can't account for this. Like, doesn't account for, like, where does that get accounted?
Well, that's why,
where the shareholders got fucked over because of this.
That's why I'm saying I think there may be a
God
problem.
God damn it.
I think there may be a problem with the statute itself. If the statute is designed.
Okay, help me understand it. Like, give me the definition of what a statute is. Cause again, I'm not.
Yes. Yeah. So there'll be a law, a law regulation. And then on top of that, there's cases. So the cases kind of set up their own law, and then the states will draft their own, and the two can go together. But if you say, for example, in Delaware, and there's something like this in Delaware, where there's a breach of fiduciary duty that you can sue in Delaware to protect the shareholders' interests, whatever, something along those lines. If you show that in reality, in this case, you're not protecting the shareholders' interest, you're working against the interests of the shareholders, then the statute might have a problem because you haven't complied with that. So
the root cause is not addressed in that. Okay.
Yeah. Or it's in the opposite. If the legislative intent of in Delaware, they are encouraging corporations to be here. They want shareholders to be protected. And then they screw the shareholders in some interpretation of the law only because maybe there's some other influences that are occurring, that would not be consistent with the statute. So there may be a statutory argument. There might be a constitutional argument. There might be a claim that he didn't get adequate due process, that he was singled out. There might be a question about the Commerce Clause, because this affects interstate commerce.
And this can be done during the appeal process, or this is after, or this is like a new thing that they have to bring forward, like argue these points.
Yeah. So they can't raise new arguments in the state court. It would have to be the same kind of arguments that have been raised. If it went up to the U.S. Supreme Court, then the Constitution arguments I made, due process, singling them out, it was improper taking, those can be raised at the Supreme Court level.
Got it.
Like that.
So then let me ask you this. So
we went to the benefit. What was the benefit? The financial benefit to Tesla in this case. So she went through the analysis. She couldn't figure it out, literally.
Right.
And because it's I don't know how you figure this out. They had five experts testify conflicting. It's because it's not clear. I don't think it is a clear standard. And what she did is she said, well, they asked for $5.6 billion and the value of the stock is like $50 billion. So you could look at those. And what she decided, she thought the most defensible, going back to what she said before, the most defensible position would be rely upon the defendant's numbers. So there's two theories on what the defendants being Elon in this case, two theories. One, the one I think is the most appropriate, and I said it was the most appropriate, is called quantum merit, which is the reasonable value of the services. So you look at the number of hours, and you might give them a premium because it's a tough case. The court looks at where in the case it goes. If it goes all the way to the end, they're more inclined to give a higher multiple, just like in stocks. So Tesla suggested that. I agreed. And that's when we talked about it, by the way, I said I thought $100 million or less would be an appropriate number, because it was a factor of that. The alternative method was to figure out, you figure out what the value of those options were. And there was expert testimony that the volume of the options was $2.6 billion. So she thought, and there was a discussion, what's the fair percentage of that they should get? So there was a case to be made for 11%. She decided at 15%. That gave her the $345 million.
That's crazy.
That's how it was derived. And
that's crazy. She said
a lot of that was kind of like, the rest was kind of like, it's not properly before me because we're already post-trial and you can't change. And by the way, some of this is procedural. Some of it is correctly procedural. A lot of it is based on her own biases and things. So I said, could you avoid an appeal? And so we can go through the appeal. How could you avoid an appeal? Well, maybe you could settle the case.
Tesla said they're going to appeal it.
Oh yeah. I expect that statement going to be made because you need leverage.
Okay. So just because they said it doesn't mean like they're
not. They may do it too. Okay. I think they will do it. But if I were, I'd want to be done with this. So what are ways to getting done with this? One, you could put in a new pay package in Delaware for whatever. You could do it in a way that probably satisfies the procedural requirements that she set forth. It would have to be a lot less.
Yeah, but did they try that again already with
the... They really did not. No, because they didn't do a pay package. They just tried to basically accept the prior pay package. They need to do a whole new deal. It can't be the same terms either. Because obviously it's not acceptable. And then it could take that and they could do a Texas one to compensate them for the difference. I know it ends up costing Tesla a lot more money because the stock's at a much higher level. So it's not like this is money free. It's not. But you could, for Elon's sake, you could figure out some way of balancing it. Because in Texas, they're going to basically let him do what he wants. Could there be now a challenge? I'm just kind of going through the possibilities.
Yeah.
Could Delaware now challenge the new pay package in Texas because it's an attempt to circumvent their ruling.
How would that in any universe be a thing? Like, how could they ever do that?
Well, I mean, anybody could sue anybody for anybody, anything.
Right.
So you would sue in federal court, probably in Texas, you'd probably lose. That would kind of be the likelihood. Could you make an agreement, though, is kind of my thought is, so now, this case is run on attorney's fees. It's nothing other than attorney's fees. I think it's all along been only attorney's fees. So if you went to the attorneys for plaintiff and cut a deal with them, could you get them to dismiss the case? So could you go to plaintiff's attorneys and say, listen, here are your two options. We're going to appeal, and then we're going to appeal, and you're not going to see the money for 5 years, and you'll spend another whatever. Or we can work out a confidential settlement. We'll pay you X number of fees. You drop the claim, and we move on. And Elon gets his pay package. The difficulty with that is you got to get, most likely, a judge to sign off on that. If it's the current judge, I doubt she's going to sign off on that. However, and I think I speculated, I think my feeling, I don't think this judge is long for the bench.
Right.
I think she's long for somebody's office as a partner in some big law firm where she can make a bunch of money. So if another judge came in and they presented that to another judge, may another judge say, maybe. Could another judge maybe, you know, receive instructions or something like that? Possible. If that doesn't happen, then it goes up to the Supreme Court, the Delaware Supreme Court. They'll go through it. Now, all these arguments we talked about, plus probably 1,000 other arguments, they'll evaluate, they'll decide. I think the biggest weakness amongst everything is the legal fees. I just think it's kind of like complete arbitrary.
Insane.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Even if I understand that technically you could say, okay, the rules weren't followed, so technically there had to be some correction to the rules, but the attorney's fees don't follow from that. That was like a nothing.
The thing that just really bothers me, Richard, is that this whole thing is just so, so obviously wrong. It's so, and that's the thing that just really, really bothers me. I understand all the processes. I understand, like, hey, this is how the law works. This is how our justice system works. Like, I respect all that stuff. But it just blows my mind that, especially with, like, and again, you expect that this would happen. You expect that this would, that this is where we would be. Maybe not with the amount for the lawyer fees or like the kind of like that couple sentences she put in the decision that kind of reinforces the idea that this judge is biased, right? Yes. It's just such an obvious, it's like she is holding his comp package hostage just because.
Yeah.
And that's the vibe I get.
It's state court. State court judges are usually appointed and then elected. So could they be great judges? Yes. Could she be like super smart? She may be like super duper smart, but she obviously has an agenda. And
how likely is that she is politically motivated?
You know, I think, you know, I don't know what motivates her. I would assume there's outside motivations. Sometimes, by the way, judges are just dicks. I had like one judge, dicks with a D. I had one judge.
Oh, I thought you were saying it with the.
Yeah, I know. I had one judge. I remember he used to put his rules on the door. So like there'd be the state rules and then there'd be local rules and then there would be this guy's rules. So on top of that. And you would go to the door. The first time you would see his personal rules would be when you were appearing on a matter that you didn't comply with the rules on yet because you just found out about them that day. And you'd go into the courtroom and he would hear a bunch of matters and he would say, I remember this. This is like 40 years ago, by the way. I remember him saying this. In my office is back there. I got a whole slew of reversed opinions back there. If you want to take me up, take me up. And that was his mindset. He didn't give a F, whatever. And if you wanted to go chase it down, go chase it down, whatever. That was his position. Stuck to me to this day. So sometimes judges are just pricks and they may just be inclined. And again, I think, you know, she may have bigger aspirations, certainly bigger monetary aspirations. And she's going to be popular with some group of people, right? There's going to be a group, some law firm, and she'll be able to attract clients. She'll have value. That's what I think is, you know, again, maybe she believes, let's assume for the sake of the argument that maybe she believes in all, but I think her biases came out throughout. I mean, and it was obvious. And again, that little defensible thing to me, and I wasn't even looking for it, by the way, but it, you know, it was
jumped out like crazy.
103 pages. I just, it's kind of like, wow, one word really stood out to me. Like
on page 71 too, right? So you were already,
I was 77. I was well into
77.
It. Yeah. Yeah. I was blurry eyed.
That's usually when you miss stuff.
Yeah. But
that's unbelievable.
But again, that kind of like that spirit, her spirit of being biased comes out. It does.
Yeah.
It's obvious.
It's hard to ignore. It is. I mean, I think as somebody who's, again, not a lawyer, never had aspirations to be a lawyer, but is finding out that this is really fun stuff. Like, I really enjoy talking through this stuff with you. I really do, because I find it so interesting how law is applied and how it's understood and how it's enforced. I think the most shocking thing to me about this whole thing is that it's like there are such obvious and clear imperfections in this system. Once you have an individual in the process that has enough power that is able to make a significant negative impact on an outcome just because she feels like it, or just because she has the wrong biases in that profession. And I think that's the thing that bugs me the most. And what I'm really happy about is that Tesla took the steps to put this up to a revote, however, right or wrong, whatever, that sort of like made it obvious that the shareholders wanted this to happen, regardless of how it came about, right? Like, it doesn't matter. The shareholders voted on it twice. You can't just assume that people don't know what they're voting for twice, especially with the amount of visibility and how much clear information people had. As like, there was no way to hide away from this. If you're a Tesla investor, you know this happened, and you know all the details, and you know what's going on. And the fact that they voted on it again with an overwhelming majority puts aside she is subverting democracy. That's the way I view it. Like, as somebody who's like, I view judges as people that uphold democracy. They uphold the laws and the regulations of the United States. And what she has done she's done, in my opinion, the exact opposite of what the will of the shareholders are, the will of the people. Like, yo, just pay this fucking guy so we can move forward. And then she's like, again, like it's, I don't know, man. It's just very frustrating. It's extremely frustrating.
Listen, it is. It is. And
it's
and
supremely frustrating. Like, it's so crazy.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, I've had my experience many times, you know, judges. That's why I don't predict, you know, generally I don't predict because you don't know what the personal biases are. You don't know. Listen, people make mistakes. Even when they're trying to be accurate, they make mistakes. When they're influenced.
That's different though, right? This is not a mistake.
No, I'm saying.
This is not a mistake.
No, that's what I'm saying. When they're influenced beyond that by outside forces, then the chances of making mistakes or making rulings or like using words or terms that suggests impropriety or bias, that happens. And it did. And, you know, it's not like this took a minute. This is like, she spent months.
Years.
I mean, the first opinion's like 250 pages long.
Yeah.
And this,
unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of time. So let's finish out the story. So we could have an agreement. We could appeal. If they win on appeal, what's the outcome? They could lose. They could modify the decision. They could send it back to the trial court. So how would they modify the decision? The Supreme Court could throw out either side of the decision. They could, you know, they could say the shareholders have spoken, or they could say the shareholders haven't spoken. Sorry. They could look at the attorney's fees and they could say the attorney's fees are okay, or they're completely out of whack. If they're completely out of whack, then they could actually input their own number if they wanted to, or usually what they'll do, send it back to the trial court and say, figure it out and do it that way. If that's the end and Tesla or Elon has not still gotten a resolution there acceptable, then they take an action to the US Supreme Court. That's not absolute. Whereas it's absolute, you can take it to the Delaware Supreme Court and they have to hear it. They don't have to hear the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, this court might be inclined to, because it's going to be a friendly court, I think, to him. And again, I raised a bunch of issues. I'm not a constitutional scholar. I guarantee you there's a lot here that can be argued. But I wouldn't predict how it's necessarily going to, how it's going to end up. I always was concerned about the attorney, me, myself.
Yeah.
I always thought the weak side was the attorney's fees side.
Yeah.
Myself.
Okay. So, and then let me ask you this. Is the $345 million number made their argument weaker because it's such a large number?
It does, because it's like upwards of the highest that was ever awarded in Delaware. And again, she even says that she doesn't even know. She's like, I don't really know how to calculate this. So I'm going to do the best I can. I don't really know if that's an acceptable standard, the best I can standard, legal standard.
Yeah.
Especially when you, especially when you couple it with the bias allegations. Again, if she would have awarded, I think the way she should have done it, if she was going to be to make her decision more defensible, she should have followed what I said, awarded between $50 and $100 million, which would have been that quantum merit, some percentage of what they actually incurred. And that would be it. This kind of puts it in question. Because again, we go back to what's the benefit that has been earned by Tesla shareholders. Negative, whatever it's going to be. According to the experts, the cost was more. This was one of my things that stuck to me. The cost is more than the benefit, right? 2.6 is the perceived benefit. The experts thought that was the cost was substantially more. I don't see then how you kind of do dances to get that to make sense. It just doesn't make sense to me.
So let me ask you this: this is my preferred outcome. What's the likelihood that the plaintiff's lawyers end up getting zero? And in opposite, they end up paying for the time that Tesla had to take to defend itself. Is there an outcome where that's possible? Maybe going up to the Supreme Court and relitigating? Yeah. Like, how do we fuck these guys over for fucking us over, right?
Yeah. Can the Delaware Supreme Court throw out the trial court's judgment and impose costs and fees, probably not fees, but costs, like in, for example, in this award, so they gave him $345 million. They also gave him, I think, $1.5 million in costs, filing fees and crap like that, and some significant amount of money for expert fees. So it wasn't insignificant. So would Tesla, if the case is reversed and they prevail, they'll get their costs, all these costs. Will they get their legal fees? Probably not. But
I see.
But the others, but the plaintiff's lawyers who now, just think about this, the party the plaintiff's lawyers are having today, right? $345 million. Hey, that's a nice party. If they end up with, $30 million in the end, that's not going to be such a nice party.
Can they end up with zero? Can they end up with zero?
Yeah. So my answer to your question is, I don't think if the court finds, the four courts going to have to find some basis for awarding them fees because they're entitled to them. And the one that doesn't look at the outcome is the one that is just strict time. That's the quantum merit one. If I get paid $20 an hour.
But let me ask you this. Hold on. But if Tesla can somehow win on appeal, or they can say, hey, this is actually this is not a correct decision. Take it away. And actually, this lawsuit ended up hurting Tesla more than it benefited shareholders. Can't they then say the lawyers that brought this forward are actually liable for damages? Like, is that a possibility?
I would say very unlikely. It'd be tough to go from winning to getting.
I don't want these guys to get anything.
Yeah, I know.
Like, but it would be tough.
It would be tough in the law to go from winning to go to have like malicious prosecution. Cause you'd have to.
Has that ever happened before?
Not really. Cause you'd have to go from like having a justifiable case to having a case where you intended to screw somebody. That's the shift. And for a court to find that, I just don't see it. You know, you'd have to be like
what if it's like a windfall chasing?
What I think is most probable to happen in the Delaware Supreme Court. And again, you know, I'm no expert in Delaware Supreme Court. I believe they're more likely to leave half the case alone, the part about the, you know, the rules and compliance and deal with the attorney's fee issue. I think, and that's how I've seen it. So I wouldn't be surprised if they reduce the attorney's fees or send it back to the trial court for reduced attorney's fees. And to get the result that you want, it would have to go up one more time to the U.S. Supreme Court where you're arguing constitutional arguments based upon how this has been handled. And it's different than what's been going on in the state court.
So the plaintiff's lawyers will likely get paid at some point. They're going to get paid something at some point. Yeah. But then Tesla could actually reverse and say, hey, this was actually messed up. So could they pay back? Is that a thing or no? Like that, they're going to make some sort of money and then they're going to walk away with some sort of
profit. They're not going to get money until the case is over.
So, and that could be until all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The leverage is on Tesla here.
Got it.
Because the plaintiff's lawyers still don't have their money.
That's funny. So, for example, like George McCormick, so McCormick is holding Elon's comm package hostage.
Yes.
And Tesla's like, well, fuck you. We're going to hold your pay package hostage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, at this point in time, so with the appeal takes 2 years.
I love the pettiness.
Yeah. I mean, but it's a way to negotiate. It creates leverage. It creates leverage because the plaintiff's attorneys, you know, again, they're going to be drooling for the next 3 years, waiting for the meat to come. And that makes them also pliable for negotiations because they got something to lose here. They didn't get $5.6 billion, but that's what, 5%? Approximately 6%. You know, obviously, none of these guys would have to work ever again in this law firm. So I think like dragging it out, throwing every piece of thing at them, make them work their ass off from this point in time. There's no reason not to.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah. I personally want something like this to never happen ever again. And I hope Tesla takes the steps necessary to make every law firm that is out to just profit for profit's sake to think twice about doing that ever again.
I was going to say, I agree. If they're justifiable positions, then go for it. I mean, literally. I mean, don't lay down because usually companies lay down, right? They resolve almost everything and you end up kind of engendering the thing you don't want, right? If you get sued by some guy and you pay him money, what happens? You'll get sued by 20 guys. That's kind of what happens. Yeah. So it's helpful that they have a legal team. Now, again, you know, I don't think less necessarily, this is the side little issue, could I critique their performance on this case? I could. And I wouldn't be surprised if I'm not the only one who might critique the case, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
Okay.
Doge, some guy from Doge might also. But yeah, it is really frustrating because the system works so slowly and because you think that these cases really should benefit shareholders. Just like, again, you know, those toxic tort cases where somebody's by a river and then some class action comes and they get a bunch of money and people actually get help. Here, it's just the exact opposite.
It's unbelievable.
And again, my position throughout, this is only a case for the attorneys. Only. That's it. Nothing else. That's it.
Yeah. It's so obvious. What's the likelihood that this decision, again, this like, let's say this upholding of the decision and the giving of these, like this large sum of money to the attorneys for attorneys fees. What's the likelihood that this is going to hurt Delaware massively in the long term?
It will.
As it comes to business formation in the state? Because I'm already seeing people talking about moving their businesses out of the state.
I mean, Tesla itself.
Yeah.
I can give you like the future. I can't tell you what happened in the past. So again, when I started law school, it's like 400 years ago, everybody incorporated in Delaware.
It was 600.
Yeah, it was 600. I got younger. Everybody incorporated in Delaware. So now people are here. So now what happens is people don't incorporate in Delaware. And even if everybody didn't move, over the next 20 years, all the new companies will not be in Delaware anymore.
They're going to think twice.
It's already happened. People go to Nevada and Texas. I mean, I see it. Nevada and Texas seems to be where I see most of the action nowadays.
Wow.
Good. I mean, well, people react. Like, you know, it's not like this is confidential. People hear it and whatever. In Delaware, their revenue, I think it was like 40% of their total budget comes from fees related to their attorney stuff.
Unbelievable.
And they're going to get killed here. And, you know, justifiably so, I think. Again, I believe in proper regulation, et cetera, but it's got to be, everything's got to be done properly and without bias. I don't really care how it ends. Of course, I do care how it ends up, but I much care if it's, the process is unfair and we're wasting a part. You know, part of it is like just that last proceeding, the where she had the hearings with regard to these two issues, as opposed, and it was a show, right? It was unnecessary. She did an all day hearing on this nonsense. If I were the judge and I were inclined, because I was in decline, I was inclined. I said it. I deny the motion. How would I have denied it? I would have sent out a ruling. Denied. No oral argument necessary. That's it. I don't need a show, whatever. Anyway, but that's the way this judge decided. Again, it doesn't relate to necessarily intellect, but I know it's frustrating. But what's interesting today is you would think with that the stock might be impacted, but it was not.
Good.
So I watched it last night. I was watching it, you know, when it came out, because I think it came out after hours.
It's down 2%, but 2%, it's not like this. 2% is
nothing on. It was down 2% when last night when the news came out after hours.
Yeah.
So, and you know, usually if at least my limited experience is like if you get an event that starts the prior day, when the liquidity starts flowing in,
it deepens.
It really goes, and it hasn't. So I think people have factored in that. There's a workaround, and I think it is. Ultimately, there's a workaround. There might be a greater cost for Tesla, but in the end, it'll be resolved. It's unfortunate we're stuck with a court that doesn't seem to have necessarily the Tesla or the shareholders in its best interest, unfortunately.
Yeah. I hate, like, from a shareholder perspective, I know Tesla's going to be more than fine.
Yeah.
This is going to be a nothing burger in the long term. What really bugs me is how obvious the corruption is. That's what really, that ultimately, that's the thing that really has me really, really mad. And it's almost like if I look at the arc of the Tesla, the company, I feel like it's hit so many different obstacles that kind of expose the weaknesses and the corruption in the system. Yep. You know, like media, lawfare, financial institutions, short selling, the SEC. Yep. It's almost like a filter for the shit that is broken.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's been what's most fascinating. It's like each year you face something that's like, well, I can't believe it's like this. And this latest chapter is freaking an idiot in Delaware.
Well, hopefully it will give us like a way to remedy some of this. Cause again, I don't think necessarily this is the way we do it. Should judges be appointed and then elected? Is that the best way of having a judge?
That doesn't seem right.
Yeah. If you don't want to have a political influence on the judge, then maybe you shouldn't have the judge elected, I would think.
Yeah. It's so crazy, right?
Yeah, it is crazy.
Do states do it differently? Where they what would be your best way to appoint a judge? Like, how would you get judges?
A judicial commission, and then maybe have like the governor sign off. But I'd have a commission appoint, and you know, have like criteria that you'd have to follow, and then but not the political appointment. And I also would allow the remedy of impeachment of judges. Much more readily. I don't want it like happening like every 5 minutes, but if a judge commits a crime, they shouldn't be able to stay on the bench. Like I know, like, for example, there's some, I'm not going to mention the name of the judge, but there's a federal judge. That's somebody who's there for life who filed bankruptcy. He's the only federal judge to file bankruptcy. And the concern is like when somebody's on the bench, does that make them now a risk that somebody might be able to influence them to make a decision.
Right. Right.
So 100%. So I think there should be cause for getting rid of judges. I don't think a political basis is a good way. I think you should find either a judicial commission or some other commission that can make recommendations with criteria, have it signed off by some executive official and move on like that. But I don't think political appointments work.
Do judges does McCormick have a term that she has to serve?
In California, they do. Like in LA, it's 10 years, Superior Court judges. So 10 years.
I feel that's another thing too. I feel like there should be terms, like SCOTUS should have terms. I don't understand why it doesn't have terms, like a 20-year term or something. I don't know
what it's confusing in state court judges. It's a little confusing because now they have private judging. So a lot of entities, as opposed to going through the public judicial system, they go through the private judicial system. So if you're a judge, let's say you've been on the bench 10 years, you're making 150. I'm just throwing out numbers. Let's say you're a judge, LA Superior Court, you've been on the bench for 10 years, making 150 grand a year, something like that. Not a huge sum of money. I mean, you know, for a lot of people, that's a huge sum of money, but not a huge sum of money. After they do that, if they want to go private, not only can they control their own calendar, do the stuff they want, but they'll probably make at least twice, maybe three times the amount of money. Wow. Yeah. So it's a much better gig. But unfortunately what happens is, and this might be an answer, kind of an answer, is the best judges leave public service because they can go make money in private service. They use the public service to get trained. That's basically all they're doing. Mm. And then they move on. And it's unfortunate because that didn't exist. When I first started practicing law, that didn't exist. That's probably the last 20 years.
To me, it sounds like the solution should be we need to pay public judges more.
Yeah.
So that they're not inclined to leave.
Well, I believe that with everybody. I think my view is, you know, like elected officials, Congress people, senators should get paid a lot more money.
You know what my solution is for that? Honestly, is cut the federal workforce by 80% and double everyone's paycheck.
Well, I'm good with that. I even go farther, but I believe also then if you do any corrupt acts, then the penalties are
massive.
Extreme. So I'll pay you, you know, $500,000 a year to be a congressman, but if I see you take a bribe, you're going to be in jail in the federal pen for 10 years. So if that's okay, then okay. But 100%. That's how I would do it. Pay executive level, but make the penalty substantial.
We should go work for Doge.
We should.
What do you think?
We should. Should. Listen, weren't they soliciting people? I think they were soliciting people.
They were soliciting people, yeah. Okay. We got to come back and talk about that once Inauguration Day comes on the 20th, because Doge, I mean, it looks like it's good. They're already working on stuff,
it
looks like. Yeah. So once Trump gets in, by the way, so my birthday's on the 19th, January.
Nice.
Then the inauguration's on the 20th, and then the college football playoffs is on the 20th.
Wow.
And Penn State has a route to go to the playoff, to the finals now. So it could very well be that there's this insane alignment of things that happen within a 24-hour span.
Did you say that Penn State's going to get routed?
Get the hell out of here.
I thought that's what I heard.
They're going to beat Oregon this weekend. I'm telling you, bro.
They're going to be what? See, how old are you? Let me guess. Don't say it. This is really tough. See, when you're like this age, anybody like who's under 50 looks about 10. So I'm just saying 30. I'm 36 and 9 months.
37.
How's that for a guess?
That was really good. I turned 30. You know, I'll turn 38 in a month.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say
that was
30.
Excellent.
I was gonna say
I'm going to guess yours. Ready? I'm going to guess 97.
96. 96. 96.
No, but for real, I'm going to say 64.
65. 66 this month.
Not bad. Oh, yeah. Wow. Almost happy. Look at this. Are you a Capricorn or no?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, me too. Oh, that's right. We knew this already, I think.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Capricorn. Okay. Hello.
Awesome. Tell people where they can find your incredible law stuff on the internet.
Not legal advice at YouTube and at rahrah999 at X and wherever else on the street. If you happen to see me.
On the streets of California. KNOT, not legal advice. Thank you so much, brother.
Take care.
I'll talk to you later.
Always good.
Bye, everybody. That was great.